You're listening to 10 and 2, an original Billiards VMSOA podcast where culture meets conversation. Hosted by Vania and Nayiri. Virginia and the DMV. More than a place for lovers, it's a sanctuary for dreamers.
Hello, pool sharks. Hello, pool sharks. Welcome to 10 and 2, where we talk about where we're headed and not necessarily knowing how we're getting there. I'm Nayiri.
I'm Vania. Mm-hmm. And we're going to grow a lot over the progression of this journey. While we do so, we really wanted to give you guys an opportunity to get to know us, and hopefully we'll get an opportunity to get to know you.
Exactly. So what are we covering? Let's touch the bases and see if we can like move on to the specialized topic that we were talking about earlier, just with, because both of us are educators, moving on to like an educator segment. But I guess just give people an opportunity to like know who we are. If you want to start, go ahead.
I mean, shoot, as far as I'm concerned, I am Vania, but y'all know that already. Mm-hmm. I'm an actor. I was an actor like almost exclusively before I started doing billiards. I'm an educator. I'm from Norfolk. I'm not even good at introductions in real life. So I'm going to spin this back to Nayiri.
Well, I mean, I'm Nayiri. I grew up in like Norfolk and Suffolk, Virginia. So like I was there for in Virginia Beach for a little bit too. My family kind of did the move around thing, but you know, 757 kind of area. I'm an educator too. I'm primarily an actor, but I'm also a director, teaching artist. I just said that. What else do I do? I mean, like, sometimes I'm doing graphics. Sometimes I'm looking at costume stuff. Sometimes I'm a facilitator or a host. It just is a matter of like, those are like jobs that I do or things that I'm associated with doing. But I mean, at my core, I think I'm just like a person that expresses well through like creative avenues.
Yeah. I feel that. And yeah. That's what I'm kind of like, when I think of who are you question,
right?
Like even in interviews, yo, oh my God, especially during, you know, we talk about the grad school thing a lot on Billiards. I feel like in all the different versions of Billiards we have, we talk about it a lot, but especially during like auditions and the like grad school auditions and the all auditions when they go, so who is Vania? I'm like, I'm right here. What do you mean? I don't, I'm, that, this is me. Some hobbies that I have, I just recently got back into like reading books actively all the time. And instead of reading nonfiction self-help type of books, I've been really getting into just reading narratives, cool stories, fun stories, just really, you know, I've been really into sci-fi and like sci-fi horror thriller lately. So I like to read.
Is there anything that sort of like, I don't know, triggered that for you, or that you were like, you know, I like the nonfiction is not doing it for me. The self-help is not doing it for me.
I think it was starting to suck the fun out of reading. Because here's the thing. Here's the thing is nonfiction reading can be fun. So for instance, if I'm reading a biography, if I'm reading, you know, if I'm reading a nonfiction book about, if I'm learning something, if I'm learning something, that can be fun, cool. But I think a lot of times when people recommend books or talk to me about books, it's always books that are supposed to make you a better person, which is cool. And I think it's one of the best ways to, you know, gather tools besides going to therapy to better yourself. But it kind of turns it into another job. And there are so many things that I do because I enjoy it that I have turned into an occupation. And I want to do some things because I just enjoy them. And with reading nonfiction self-help, it feels like a task and not a thing that I'm doing just for the enjoyment of reading.
Right. Because it then it
Yeah.
becomes another thing that you're sort of like have a running list in your head of, oh, am I doing this thing? Have I tried doing this thing? Am I keeping up on this schedule? Am I trying to do, you
Yeah. Like
it
it feels
is.
like I'm not just enjoying the creative, and sure, nonfiction self-help, you could consider creative, but it's a definitely a different kind of creative than novels and storytelling happening.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I
one
like to engage in the storytelling.
is narrative, and then the other is not that, self-help and nonfiction can't follow along, a storyline, but it's different to have something that exists in its own scope and its own space that then we get to have a witness to without having to make ourselves a part of the process. We get to experience the story wash over us and like have our views and opinions of it, but it doesn't actually have to be then our shifting, our moving. It's not a part of
Yeah.
it's we are
Yeah.
taking it. It's another way of like, ingesting. It's like taking in something. But I think I would say that might be something that a lot of creative people experience. Like, yes, there's so much of our work that is like now because we've chosen this profession, because we've chosen creative avenues, and whether we're day-to-day teaching or we are doing, on set for a film, or I'm in a rehearsal for a play, or I'm drawing because I want to stay sharp on, any of those things. Once you turn it into the thing that I am now making money with, it can have the effect that is, oh, well, now it's life is dull and boring and I have to do it repeatedly and do it religiously.
Yeah.
Put a price tag on whatever the creative mode is, but I think that is like something that happens when we ask ourselves, well, okay, well, who are you? Who are you? Who are you? People immediately start rattling off on these lists of like their accolades. It's like going through the resume. Like, that's who I am is my resume. And that's just not necessarily the case. But I think it becomes our normalcy to do that because it's what people expect. That says what is the expected answer when someone is like, who are you? What, or sometimes they just immediately are like, what do you do? But I think that's just leaning in towards the curiosity of like, what have you decided to pursue from a place of authenticity or from a place of, deciding how you want money to flow in your life, or what have you, like, what are you up to? What are you in the middle of? What are you discovering? What are you, those questions become
Yeah.
points that actually tell us a little bit more about who we're, of course, I'm holding
Are you holding a pretzel like a cigarette right now?
it's just because it's a small, like, I've literally never smoked a cigarette a day in my life, but I don't know why when I have a tiny little stick in my hand, then I have to turn it into a little something. But okay, well, that's I guess okay, then I would say at my core and at my basis, I'm a person who values individuality as well as where that individuality fits into a community. From there, my way that I like to incorporate and expand that in my day-to-day walking life is being involved in theater organized work. Whether that looks like it's film or on stage, the process of putting stories together and welcoming in everyone's contribution within that is one of the ways that I find a lot of satisfaction in creating and being with people. So I think that's a big part of who I am, you know, other than just enjoying aesthetics and beauty and creating a product, but also enjoying the process on the way to the product. So, yes. Yeah.
I'm actually, that's really interesting how for a second I was like, I have gone so far off track. And then I was like, oh, wait, everything we're talking about right now actually really leans into the specific topic we're going to be talking about later
No,
because it's
absolutely.
identity as an artist versus, you know, what it means to be an educator because, like, those things are not so far apart.
No, not at all. And I think so.
They're not far apart at all.
Imagine that they are. And I would find that because the majority of the work that I do throughout the year is specifically theater garnered teaching work. Where I'm on residency within a particular program where we're going into a school and generally putting on a play with a set of students. That's usually what my day to day in my work looks like right now for the majority of the year. And then for a good chunk of the year, I'm also doing acting positions too. And then, you know, we're also doing what we do with billiards throughout the year. But I think what often ends up happening, and I think this is just coming up for me lately in life, but also just noticing that there is a disdain for teachers. Like, and I think that's a way that our culture is right now also shifting as far as, you know, with the current administration and the sort of pushing down on intellect so that people are not being given an opportunity towards empowerment through education. And I think because teachers are paid so little, and people think that, oh, people who want to teach just like being around children, or they just like to, like, I don't know, be the boss of someone, or like people settle for being a teacher when they can't do the work that they want to do. Like, that these are just all things that get created and tossed around and thrown onto people who are in these positions who do valuable work, and yet somehow the constant thing that we equate those educational spaces to and the people in those spaces is that they would rather be doing something else.
See, so you are hitting the nail right on the head because I work specifically in public education, and the thing I teach isn't necessarily directly it well it is directly correlated with theater in the case that I teach English writing, reading. You have to read and write in theater, and in order to be a good actor, you kind of have to be able to read and write. But I don't teach acting. The only plays we read are Shakespeare. I,
You
yeah, like,
don't do it without it, but it's helpful to be able to read and write.
exactly. But, like, basically, I feel the exact same way. I think that people have this idea that we are doing it because it's. I think people really overestimate how easy the job can be. Because I don't go in there and twiddle my fucking thumbs. I don't go in there and I don't go in there.
We could be cussing on this, but be twiddling the thumbs, the bleep thumbs, continue. But
I don't go in there like I don't know, like I'm not a babysitter. And I think the problem is parents think that we're babysitters. They think that we're babysitters. I think the general public, like people who are not educators, tend to think that what we do is babysitting, that we just stand up there and yap. But that's only like a piece of what you do. Because then you have to essentially go up against all of the things that they're bringing into the classroom with them. And all of that is semi somewhat besides the point. But I am not a teacher in lieu of, or an educator in lieu of being an actor. It's more so, I am an educator, I in a weird way, because I'm an actor.
Yeah.
I think something about what I've learned as an actor and the way I've developed as a person has really fed into my natural calling for education. And I would also say that two things can be true at the same time. I think this goes into this that thing we were talking about earlier with identity versus occupation. I am not my job. Am I a teacher? Yes. But I also clock out. I don't spawn in at the top of the day and despawn at 2 o'clock when the school day is over. I leave and I go home and I still exist. Mm-hmm. So when people go, you know, oh, you know, like if, you know, if those who can't do teach, I'm like, not true.
I think it also is something that is, has been worked into at least the American model of school. Because I mean, if we think about the way that the school day runs and the structure on which at least public schools specified has been created, developed, and maintained throughout this country in particular, is that it was already something coming up and moving through, like, you know, way back in Industrial Revolution, where like the model became like, okay, if we're not going to be having all these children working out in the field and doing stuff, they need to be doing something all day. And the model is taught to teach them how to become further workers. So it's kind of like teachers then are expected to be in this position of like supervisors and dictators and babysitters rather than people who are moving towards the cultivation of young minds, you know? And that's also in the sake of just being, you know, a teacher of public schools or the ages, you know, from kindergarten or preschool up through high school. Like, this is not even to mention when we start to step into collegiate land or for people who are teaching artists who sort of only come in on individual contracts and then they come and they go. Or even coaches who have individualized sort of meetings with people. But I think people assume that, oh, if you are also these other things, we can flatten and cheapen your value within those other spaces by saying, oh, well, you're just sticking to this space and it's not like this job pays you through the roof, so you can't be doing it for money. And it's like, I still gotta live. I still gotta eat. Number one, I still gotta live and I gotta eat. And it's not my fault that y'all don't want to pay the teachers. It's not my fault. But also, it doesn't make one thing less valuable or less doable or less skilled just because you can do another thing.
Right.
Actively doing that one thing, does that not mean that you have settled for it? These things can all be on a plane and we're moving and going through them.
And see, that one word, settled, is, I think that when people, and I would say most, because rarely ever do other artists who rarely ever do other artists refer to me being a teacher as me settling.
Yes.
People who are not like, and I think everybody has a capacity to be an artist. However, people who do not identify themselves as artists or creatives are usually the people that go, oh, you know, this is your actual job, and then acting as a supplemental thing. And I'm like, no, I do both things and I take both jobs very seriously. I don't settle for one or the other. I definitely don't settle for my job as an educator because I take my job as an educator very seriously. I recognize that I have 150 kids. And out of those 150 kids, every other day, at least 2 or 3 days out the week, these kids see me, right? And anything I say or do, the littlest stuff, could change them permanently. And I wouldn't even know. So I'm not, there is no settling. And I would be a lie to sit here and act like that there's zero truth to the idea that some artists settle in education. There are some that do it. I have met some that go,
yeah, we know them.
Yeah, we know them. Look, I know artists who at least at that point in time were not booking the way they wanted to. Mm-hmm. So They held classes and became adjunct professors or joined the public school system. And even so, even if an artist is settling, hot take, if an artist is settling into education temporarily, is that like, I don't think that's always entirely indicative of their worthiness as an artist or their skill set, because sometimes the industry is just like that. Sometimes the industry just ain't rocking with you at a given point, and I gotta make money.
To control that, like, that's if we're not the ones making the picks in the room, it's not like the skill isn't there. Like, so I cannot tell you how many classes I've been a part of where people are like, you know, it's not that you're not talented. It's not that you are not really great in the role. It's not like, you know, like those things. There's so many factors that go into the selection of for actors in particular, because I think we're getting into the frame that is like people say, oh, those who can't be an actor right now become a teacher instead of being an actor. Lord, I lost my train of thought. It went off the end of the rails. But I think I was saying, yeah, it could be all of those factors. And you can have two of the five things that they want. You can have four of the five things you want. You can have all five and they think you need to be a little taller. Like, it's truly wild to think that just because someone is not the face that you see every single day on a television screen, that they're still not actively within the frame of work that they're doing. And I think that it often comes from people who are outside of the field, because they already have their own assumptions about who artists are and what they do and why they do what they do. And I think that's one of the reasons, like, because at least with, I'll talk, you know, at least getting into Billiards specifically. Like, before I was a part of Billiards Music and being in that sector, I was over in the land of, you know, our sector where we're looking at how we can start pushing forward education in these varied forms of arts so that people have access to expanding them specifically within the Virginia. And I think that's incredibly important. And I think education is one of the ways that people then gain accessibility to put a frame on, to start creating the things that they would like to see, because it's so much harder to be able to do that if you don't know the ways in which that can become an actualized thing. And so that was one of the reasons that I was like, oh, I really want to be a part of Billiards. Like, I think it's important that young people see that, yes, this is a job and a profession. I think it's super important that young people, I mean, even, you know, adults, but in general, that people are educated in knowing that these are structures and systems and professions that advance, that are currently happening, that have been happening over time, and there are ways that we can continue to cultivate that. But half the problem is people not knowing these things exist or that there are spaces that they can get into doing. And you know, you hit that point where you're literally just like, yeah, you know what, you said it. And he's just like,
And we said, and like, I feel like you and I, like, talking about this particular topic, it's like, you know, what is it, preaching to the choir type
that
of.
sounds true, because we get it, but.
Because we get it. We get it. And just to, I don't even want to say play devil's advocate. I
No.
would like to be entirely candid, because I feel like that's like going to be a big piece of this podcast, is, you know, just being candid. As, and you and I have talked a lot personally about, you know, how I feel about where I'm at right now in my acting journey. There are a lot of times where I struggle with that insecurity of, I have not been booking anything. I did not get into grad school on my second try. There's other details and context to that, but you know, screw all that for right now.
Nice.
I didn't get it the second time. And it has been, and I was like literally depressed for like 2 to 3 weeks after getting my waitlist letters. And I really had no choice. Not that I'm upset about it, but like I was now having to face the fact that I'm like now going to be really leaning into my career as an educator more than I intended to, more than I planned. And while I don't like, even if I did get in, I would miss being a teacher.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something to that. But also, of course, I am super disappointed that I didn't get to move on and do the thing that I wanted to do. But like there's a lot of complicated feelings I have, but obviously there's a piece of me that maybe feels like there's some truth to that idea. Because sometimes I feel like I'm the failed artist that is now teaching English.
Yeah, but you know, that's it's a judgment, essentially. Like it doesn't make you less of an artist or less inclined to be doing acting work specifically because you're also sustaining yourself as an educator. Like it just, and it can bring up levels of insecurity, but that's because it's being washed over with this blanket of judgment on worth and value and what it means about, I say this with, you know, quotation fingers, anyone who is listening rather than looking at a screen, this of what your value is as an artist if you are not actively doing the art all the time. It's the same, you know, like the doing versus the being, like what are we working to cultivate? What are we doing, and in what ways are we allowing generalized judgment and shaming to be the way and the lens through which we see ourselves in this work? Because even I can say, like, oh, like I'm disappointed when I don't get cast in things that I wanted to be cast in, or I'm disappointed when, man, I really thought I was gonna get this role, but they actually see me as more of a this for this particular project, you know? Like, it's one of those things that we have to, number one, learn to take is not personal. Like, it's just not personal. There's a whole frame and a whole line of story and things to be created that don't have to be reflected, I mean, reflective, excuse me, of our talent, or dedication, or any of those things. It's just like sometimes the chips fall the way they do, and we don't need to take it personally. If other people are having the judgment on, oh, you're only doing this because you can't be acting every 2 seconds, not to take it personally. That's their assessment. That's their judgment. Like, what are we supposed to do with that? It's theirs.
And see, it's funny that you say that part, right? Because that's the newest thing that I've been trying to come to terms with is not only can you not take it personal, not only is it not always because your talent, but you like if it was about their idea of your talent, if it was about what they felt like they saw. I was at an audition recently and I was really nervous because I didn't want to do a bad job because I've lived in Norfolk my whole life and I still live here. Most of the theater work that I've done has been here, so I'm very familiar with most of the people in the acting circuit in this area, right? I didn't want them to see me and think, oh my gosh, this is what her acting is like. No wonder she didn't get into grad school, especially because I was really struggling with that particular monologue. These are just the judgments that I'm having on myself that I'm projecting onto other people in situations, right? Because ultimately, they didn't do anything in that scenario that would lead me to think that they were thinking that. Again, just a judgment I was passing on myself and projecting onto the people in front of me. But the thing is, and even if they were, so what? It's their assessment. They only see you as long as they see you, and they only know what they think they know. And at the end of the day, if they didn't like it, so what? So what? And it's so hard to actually tell myself that. Because even though I know logically, like, who cares?
It's hard.
People think a lot of things.
So much of our work, particularly theater work, acting work, is, you know, across, what is the word I'm trying? It's collaborative. It involves having other eyes, other opinions, other things happening. When we're doing the work in the room and creating a story, when we're doing it on stage, there's a director to give you feedback on what you're doing. So it's normalized for us to take on the opinions of other people, to soak them up and make adjustment within that frame. But it's also like, we're people, we interact with people every single day. Like, it's a part of keeping our bodies safe and our minds safe and our emotional world safe, engaging with other people, being mindful of how they think and what their opinion is of us. It's normal. And it makes it much harder to be able to shut off the sort of inner critic that we develop having dealt with all of the other critics we experience, whether they intentionally are critics or not, they're critics, offering opinions, whether they're asked or not. And we have to like learn to navigate that while still staying authentic to what feels right for us within the work, and also not taking the numbers for it. Like, I can, and this sounds silly, but like Beyonce just this year, one album of the year. How long has this woman been making albums? How many things has she put out? How many?
This year, this is her first time?
Album of the year, yes!
She's never won Album of the Year. I always assumed and that was like a given.
The problem the whole time that the peoples were out here, like, you know, she had won song, she had won, you know, video, like all these other things. But Album of the Year was not something that she had gotten the credit for until Cowboy Carter. And you make the space because that's the thing.
Carter's the one she would win. She should have won that for Renaissance at least. B-Day.
Exactly. Then there you have
Cowboy Carter.
Acid that are, you know, lining up iconic work and still not being critically recognized for it. And yet take away from who they are and what they're doing and the impact that they've had in communities in which they are cultivating and creating what they're doing. And just because it isn't like got every single time doesn't mean that the work isn't valuable or that it makes them any less of an artist when they don't get the reward. We don't become less of artists when we're not actively on an acting contract, you know?
See, and I'm only tossing these things out there again because we can sit here and agree and agree and agree all day. But I'm just sprinkling, you know, my personal insecurities in this current season, from this current season, for the sake of, like, you know, moving the conversation forward. But, like, I know for me, it's not even that I feel like less of an artist. I just be feeling like there's no way. I know it's not, like, logically, I know this is not true, and it's not how being an artist works, especially, like, a professional artist. There's no way I don't suck and I'm like consistently taking L's, and I like, there's no way, like, if I'm taking these many L's in a row that I don't suck. And because acting is one of those things where you could do everything, air quotes for those who can't see what I'm doing, air quotes, you could do everything the quote unquote right way and still not get it. And that just is what it is. You can do everything the right way and still not get it. And, you know, you see these things. And I think in a world that does not operate socially from a place of creativity, our idea, it's almost like capitalistic. It's like, well, I work this hard.
It is.
I work this hard, so I should get the thing, even though that's not really how capitalism works either. that's neither here nor there. I worked this hard, so I should have the thing. In the realm of creativity and artistry, I worked this hard. Maybe I'll get it. Maybe I won't. I kind of have to let that go.
Right. Right. But it's in the model. It's the model. It is the thing that we have as a culture and as a society. It's along that line of capitalist, white supremacist sort of structure that is, if you are not the one who's doing it all the time, if you are not the thing, if you are not it, if you are not earning high, if you are not, then what you are doing is not a value. Is of influence, is of no importance.
And so even, and with that, it kind of tied, that kind of ties back into the artist versus, not versus educator, but artist as educator conversation.
Thank you.
I used to, educator. Mm-hmm. Say it again.
I said, just thank you for voicing and saying that. I am an artist as an educator. Like,
oh yeah.
Artist.
Because it's like it's not one or the other. These things are not mutually exclusive, but I know at one point, one of the reasons I started taking my passion for education seriously, one of many, is that I started to wonder, what am I even really putting into the world if I'm just an actor? I really started to feel that way. But think about it like this, right? This is something that I just recently, like a theory that's starting to develop in my body the more I consume media and experience day-to-day public education.
Yes.
People will take what they see in media. So from performers, actors, artists, they take that and they learn things from that too. Whether it's good or bad is up in the air. But actors are low-key teaching, even the ones who are actual like educators, you are teaching people something every single day. Every time somebody watches that show, watches that movie, they're learning something about that, even if it ain't true.
All art, in the best and worst ways, are propaganda. They are. They are.
Yes, precisely.
Shared, you know? Like, and that's not to say that all forms of propaganda are like awful and terrible, but that they are essentially, by definition, a form of sharing something out and that being painted through a particular lens. I'm gonna click us over. Yeah, I just don't. I think it's important to recognize and acknowledge that doing educational work, educating and teaching is not a profession that is pure virtue and structure, and like it's not that. It is the day-to-day stepping to delivering information in a way that is accessible, processable, and then again shareable for the goal of being able to interact with each other in productive and progressive ways, as well as moving each person towards self-actualization, with being able to take in and process information and understand how to intake and process information in a way that is moving us towards positive shifts and changes based on information and not just perspective. Within that, artists who consistently are critically observing the world, critically asking the questions about, is this something that we want to perpetuate? Is this something that is acceptable? Are the people of the community being served? Are there people who are being left out of conversations? All of those things are characteristics that come up within an artist doing their work. And so us being aligned in teaching work is not a mirror of our failure.
Yeah.
It is an example of how we are well suited to be multidimensional.
Absolutely. I think, and that's why I was saying earlier, and you like put it perfectly. That's what I meant earlier when I had said that I think me being an actor has strongly informed how I am as an educator. Mm-hmm. because while people are sitting here saying, you know, those who can't do teach, some of the people who can't teach are exactly what you say. They be doing. And then also, some of the people who went to college for education, got their degree in education, walk into your schools and are the exact teacher you're afraid of. It ain't us, babe. Exactly. It don't be us.
Well, those teachers. Everyone knows those teachers. And I think sometimes that may be also what they are grabbing a hold of. They imagine that those teachers they had those poor experiences with, rather than those experiences coming from a place of that teacher being inconsiderate or flawed or too restrictive in ways, are reflective of that person, that teacher being individually unhappy and thus taking it out on everyone else. So when they see artists in the positions of being teachers, what they remember is the poor interactions they've had with teachers. And then they say, oh, well, you must be an unhappy artist because teachers act like this. It's also a generalization of the way teachers behave for, you know, poor teachers at least.
Right. And I think also, which we already, I feel like, kind of touched on a lot, but there's also like the idea of what does it mean to be successful as an artist?
Yeah, I know.
What does it mean? What is that? What is that? And again, for the non-artist, like any actor has had to go through the list of questions. What do you do? Mm-hmm. I'm an actor. Oh, so you want to be on Broadway? Oh, so you want to be in a feature film? You want to da-da-da-da?
Yeah.
And would I like to be in a feature film one day? Yeah. Ooh. Of course.
Right.
Does that mean that if I'm not doing that I have zero success in my craft? No. There are so many ways that success as an artist presents itself. Like for me, my success for me always looks like the a lot of what I define as success as an actor has more to do with my growth and my progression than it does how much I'm booking. And that's why for me, me not getting into grad school messed with me so bad, because I align my success with training, which is an issue, like a separate thing that I'm, you know, trying to process and, you know, piece together and unpack and all the things.
Yeah.
But a lot of people go, oh, if you're not getting booked, if you're not at Tyler Perry Studios, then what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's been the new one. Tyler Perry Studios.
You're like, why don't you call him Tyler Perry?
And I'm like, girl, no.
Get this man on speed dial, number one.
Number one. And he not putting me in one of them wigs.
Two. Maybe I would like to be aligned in sci-fi work. Maybe I would like to be aligned in commercial work. Maybe there are different avenues and there's a whole realm in which this work exists that I think for people often from the outside of this profession have such a jaded scope on what they think an actor is.
Yeah, because they only see finished products per se, so to speak. They only see who these actors are now that they broke into the industry, the biggest part of the industry. They're like, oh, so actors do what they do for attention, to be seen. Success is aligned with how many eyes are on them. And the reality is that most of those actors, if you watch their interviews, were fighting for their life, trying to get, like, a lot of them had to do the same things that we do
Now,
right now.
but because
Like,
you're not at the level of publicity that
right.
those actors are at, then all the same characteristics that are thought to be what keep them going, what keep them motivated, what make them such great actors, then get stomped on and demonized or belittled when someone is still in the middle of process. And I think that's also a way that we as people are not focused enough on journey, on process, on being in the midst of creating rather than the product, the product, the product.
And I don't feel like we apply this same logic, funny enough, even though it is a very, capitalism-driven mindset that doesn't necessarily apply to, I feel like, creative jobs or creative, like creative lifestyles, however you want to piece it, creative careers. I don't feel like we're as harsh about it when it comes to blue collar, white collar, theoretically non-creative things. You can find creativity in anything, but you get what I'm saying. Like,
Exactly.
say if I wanted to go be a lawyer, you know how long it takes to, like, actually, or a doctor, right? How long it takes to, one, get into and get through medical school. You're not out until you're like 30 something at the earliest, and that's if all the cards are just, like, in your favor. Then you have to find a job, and that takes time. You're not just walking into somebody's, hospital. I'm a doctor. Like, you, like, and nobody's gonna sit there and go, oh, well, he failed as a doctor, so that's why he's still working at this pharmacy or whatever doctors do in lieu of their actual, their like, ultimate goal. But a lot of times, like, say if a doctor wants his own practice, right? But he's still working at this other person's practice. You don't say he's a failed doctor. You just say he's doing this over here for right now. But we're really harsh about it. And I will say,
But I
I'll
guess in
speak for
some
myself, very harsh on myself when it comes to that idea of what I'm doing right now versus what I want to do.
And I think that could be also sort of like when we see all these people, like we'll say, oh, like if you are a person who's going to law school, and let's say you fail out of, the testing for that to become an actual lawyer, being able to get through those processes after a certain point and after a certain amount of taking them, there is a point where, by definition, like you are not that profession because you are not meeting the credentials to be within that profession. And I think that's what I think can ring it in for some people as actors and as creatives when they're like, oh, well, they're not wrong. I am not in the middle of actively doing that specific job right now while I'm doing this other one. And thus, they can immediately put the flag up of like, oh, yes, you failed. Of course, you failed. You're not doing the thing. You're not actively in the middle. You have failed. You are not that thing. Which, in some degrees, it's like, yes, I'm not actively doing that thing. But if I'm a person who does it in one part of the year, and then I scale around, and then I come and do other things, and then I come back to that as well. Then what happens? Then do we define it by how many times you try it again? Do we define it by am I actually right now at this moment doing it? Then do we define it as then we step into also like what are the de definitions of like what this is, you know? And I think all of that can get particularly complicated. But for those of us who are on the receiving end of that kind of specific vicious criticism, it's imperative that we do not put on the judgments of other people, that we do not put on that sort of harsh rhetoric about, who we are. and how we exist within our creative frame, you know?
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, those are facts. Like, that's really what it boils down to is, you know, those things, while they might be widely assumed, are not true based off of just based off the assumption. So you cannot put on or take on, or like, you are not obligated to be in receipt of the judgments people want to pass on what it is that you're doing. You are in under no obligation to go. You're in under no obligation to really like receive or take on other people's projection of fear. Cause usually that's what it is people are easier said than done, by the way. I'm saying that as somebody who is fighting these voices of fear on a regular basis, all things that, you know, you know, like if you take it from the spiritual angle, somebody at some point said to me, there's what God gives you and what people give you.
Yeah.
And a lot of times those inner criticisms that we have, and I know that I have, when I go, oh, well, I'm not actively acting right now, I didn't get the thing that I want, so maybe I am a failure, that is usually coming from a place of what other people, how I'm allowing other people to define my success.
Yeah.
And as artists, I think one of the reasons a lot of us may deal with imposter syndrome is because we're letting people who actually have no clue what this is define it for us.
Right.
Like, we're letting the actual imposters define, like, the actual imposters. Yes, seriously. Like, we're letting the actual imposters go in and go, so this is what your success should look like. Like, we're letting people who don't do what we do go, here's what makes sense and how success works.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing it, you suck, you're failing, and you should give up right now.
Failing. Yeah.
You're not really an actor because you haven't called Tyler Perry. You you weren't in any of his recent soap operas, you know, engaging in debauchery, therefore.
Yeah.
You're not really an actor. And sometimes we take that and go, yeah. Yeah, I guess that does make sense. Again, all of these things coming from a place of fear.
Yeah.
My tripod has been unlocked this whole time and it just never collapsed for some reason. And you know what? I'm grateful.
Period.
I'm just not realizing. I just looked down and went, oh, wow.
Gratitude. And you know, Lily, on that note, because here's the thing. We could talk about this forever. Absolutely forever. And you know, we could. We'd be yabba yabba.
Yeah.
On a gratitude note, I guess I'm super grateful for now beginning this in this space where we have these conversations with each other, but also to Billiards as a whole for the reminder that artistry is in process. It is in practice. It is not always going to be what the result is. Like, we're actively creating and doing and moving. And sometimes that looks like we're getting accolades for it. And sometimes that looks like that we're still just doing it.
Yeah.
I think that's worthy enough. I think that's great enough. Like, I'm super grateful to, you know, you, whoever's listening, like, pull sharks, peeps. Like, it's something to share in space with some people. Like, it's something to be curious about others. It is something to carry art and creativity in us, whether or not it is being pedestalized, you know?
Yeah. Well, like I said, you said what needed to be said. So, everyone, thank you so much for joining us. We're your host with 10 and 2, reminding you to enjoy the ride. You can listen to 10 and 2 on Spotify, Apple Music, and YouTube. Look for us under the Billiards Podcast.
Keep your ears open for our next episode of 10 and 2, brought to you by Billiards. VMSOA. And never forget, Virginia is not only a place for lovers, it's a sanctuary for dreamers.